Hello, I can't see anybody because all the lights are in my eyes, but I presume there's a room full of people. I thank very much Jorge for giving me a second opportunity this time to actually get it right after making all the mistakes last summer. Because I actually presented, and we all presented these presentations last summer, I can't do things exactly the same way. I got to do things differently. So I'm changing, even though I have slides that I'm presenting, I'm actually going to present differently. So rather than me telling you, who probably know a whole lot more than I do, what the challenges are, I'm going to ask the people in the audience, what do you think are the big challenges that now face conservation today? Now, I can't see anyone, so I presume, so just shout it out. And then what I'll do when you shout it out, I'll then show you what I think it is, at least from the perspective of Washington, and then tell you why. So, what do you think? What are the new challenges that face conservation?
Crop insurance.
Crop insurance. That's an interesting one. What else?
Lack of extension.
Lack of extension. In other words, lack of money. What else? No other challenge.
More variations in climate.
More climate change. Okay. So let me. This is what I actually have. Thought are the most important new challenges. And if you're in Washington, it's always got to be the lack of federal funding. Money is always the first thing on your mind. And then the second thing, of course, as was stated, it's climate change. It's making it even more difficult. If you thought you had the answer right, suddenly climate change comes along, changes all the background conditions, and you have to start it over again. And then another thing that is becoming more and more of a subject of conversation in Washington is population pressure. And a lot of discussion of how we're going to feed provide from our agricultural lands, a world of 9 billion people. And what it's asking for is how do we produce with existing resources more. I don't need to go over these very, very quickly, but we all know that money for conservation has gone down. We know, as we've heard at these presentations throughout today and the last couple of days, that there's going to be even more pressure on the carbon of soils with the higher temperatures. And as the world becomes wealthier, wealthier people want to eat more meat. They want to actually live the lifestyle of the United States. And as a consequence, they will go to, there will be more demand to produce the grain that feeds the livestock, that feeds the people in these other countries. That means more grain on existing amount of agricultural land. At the same time that we're actually using more of our land, particularly in this country, not for food or feed, but also for fuel. All right. 40% of the corn acreage now in this country is now used for biofuel production. These are all the drivers of change in the context of which conservation must function in the future. But as we've heard in the previous discussions today, we've already got existing problems. You know, why should I still be optimistic? Why should I be talking about, new opportunities to make progress? And we've already said we're not making good progress with existing problems. I have to show you the slide in any case because I have to introduce my cartoon friend, and that is Zumba the elephant. And Zumba represents production agriculture, and we all like Zumba because production agriculture has given us lots of wonderful things. We have lots of cheap food, abundant food. However, Zumba also has another little friend, that is poop. That is the byproducts of agriculture production, that what we would say the negative externalities associated with very productive agriculture. If I can get this thing to working. why do we still have these problems? An economist, and I start out as a scientist. I was a biochemist, have been the past 10, 15, 20 years, mostly worked with economists doing economics. It's because we're producers are responding to the signals they get from the marketplace, and the marketplace says, use the resources of the soil, the energies of the soil to produce those products that are rewarded by the marketplace. The other ecosystem services associated with the soil are not as rewarded, as we last heard from a couple of presentations, and hence we, from a societal perspective, underproduce those services. What do we do about that? Well, we've heard from Peter and others, the traditional interventions have just not been enough. And this reminds me, I think, I may be paraphrasing a quote from Albert Einstein, who said, the definition of madness is keep on doing the same thing that doesn't work. And we keep on doing the same things that don't work. Many of the voluntary measures have not done very well, are not sufficient. We're not going to get ever more federal support in order to further induce ever more adoption of many of these practices. We've got to start thinking differently. And we're certainly not going to be regulating agriculture in the near term, in the near future. Here's my friend Sumba. She's still getting ever bigger, producing ever more waste. But right behind we have Sumba, and that is my friend Zach. And he's the consortium. And what we usually do, and Zach, of course, represents our conservation programs, whenever we have a mess produced that's being caused by production agriculture, we bring in another custodian. And ever in the next farm bill, we bring in ever more custodians, many custodians running around, often running into each other. And it's a madhouse, some of which are contradictory and conflict with each other. Back in 2002, the policy community in Washington, D.C., asked the question, how much money do we need in order to fix the problem? The result was a program that many of us are very familiar with, the Conservation Effects Assessment Project, SEEPT, that really asked the question, you know, what works, you know, what needs to be done, how much is actually needed to get the job done. Unfortunately, it's been about 10 years of results from SEEP. We still haven't answered the original question, how much money do we need? But we have learned a lot. We know that a single practice approach is not sufficient. We need multiple practices, systems approaches on the landscape in order to achieve the environmental benefits we wish. You have to continue to maintain. I'm not saying anything new here. These are some of the lessons that were gone, the messages that were mentioned by the previous speakers. The what is grown is as important as how it is grown, and when it is grown is extremely important. But you also need to know where interventions have occurred. And it's an amazing thing. When SEEP began, the first question that had to be asked is, okay, where did we actually do conservation practices? And we had to conduct a big survey to find out what was done and where. And then, of course, we always need more money. But it's not necessarily federal money. And this is a point I have to reiterate. Plus, it's not the watershed. We don't have very clearly defined boundaries of the problem. It's really the problem shed. We're dealing with the air, we're dealing with water, we're dealing with wildlife. Those are very different boundaries, and they don't necessarily coincide with political boundaries, certainly not county boundaries. So we have a governance structure that is not consistent with the problem domain. The Soil and Water Conservation Society, as well as other organizations, have made the case for a new paradigm, and that is in using an ecosystem services framework in which to evaluate the trade-offs that are always going to be associated with agricultural production and the use of agricultural land, recognizing that It is not a simple answer of do or do not. We're not going to be taking land out of agricultural protection necessarily to achieve one ecosystem service benefit. We're trying to manage that larger landscape for the greater societal good. The systems approach, we have to recognize and evaluate the trade-offs associated with alternative management of the landscape. Adaptive management. We never know perfectly what's going to be the result. We have to treat every intervention as an experiment, just about. And there has to be an accountability. If I do something, who are the decision makers? What has been the result of their performance? A recently issued report, White House Council report on climate preparedness resilience, stated we need to manage our U.S. carbon sinks, conserve soils, forests, and other areas to store carbon. And I think the second point is most important. You have to manage and increase the capacities of these areas to provide these ecosystem services along with carbon storage. We need to be managing these systems for the services that the landscape can provide. None of this is new. An amazing thing is actually recognizing the importance of managing ecosystems way back in 1969 when the National Environmental Protection Act, the grandfather of all environmental laws, was passed. The language that they used, of course, was the language of 1969, not necessarily the language of today. But the point is the same. These are multidisciplinary problems. We need multidisciplinary tools for ecosystem system assessments. We have the appropriate policymaking structures to make decisions. However, at that time, in 1969, when you think about it, we had no GIS. We did not have the databases that exist today. You didn't have the science of the day. And typically what happened, you did second best. You came up with procedures. You came with programs. We don't know what the problem is. However, we'll put that practice in place and hope and pray that it works. In many cases, as we have learned, they simply led to other problems. It reminds me of when I was a kid. Back when I was a little kid and back in the 1950s, whether if you had a headache or a stomach ache, you went to the doctor and the doctor would always say, take two aspirins and see me in the morning, or call me tomorrow. NEPA called again for this systematic multidisciplinary approach, integrating the use of natural and social sciences. It's very difficult for soil scientists and hydrologists and agronomists and others to actually talk to economists and work together and come up with a common vocabulary. It has often taken decades in order to fuse some of the thinking together so you do have these multidisciplinary tools. But if we go to a meeting like today or at the Soil and Water Conservation Society, we realize we've made tremendous progress in the past 20, 30, 40 years. It's now a question of using those tools and the knowledge that we've generated. We still have no federal institution for ecosystem services. We have fragmented governance. Even with NEPA, NEPA has only been as good as the individual agency's commitment to implementing and complying with NEPA. In many cases, has not worked at all. This top-down approach that was envisioned back in 1969 has had limited success. I'll move faster. What economics would say, we need to use prices as what I would bringing back the metaphor that I'd introduced, as the ringmaster, the opportunity to actually make sure that Zed, the custodian who follows behind the elephant, is actually up to the is not bumping into other custodians, that the whole thing works in a cohesive, harmonious manner in order to address the problems of the ring. The technologies that exist today can be better used in order to better utilize prices to allocate, more efficiently allocate resources to address these problems. You don't necessarily need to have wholesale markets in order to utilize prices. Prices can be utilized in a contractual relationship between a single buyer and a single seller, but they need the tools to understand how they benefit from a different intervention on the land. There have been a number of attempts, limited so far, but recognizing it takes time. It's not easy getting the price right. How much time do I have?
Three
minutes. We can estimate, and many economists have done so, what some of these ecosystem services, the value to society, but that's not the price. The price is what I'm willing to pay as a substitute for not doing something else. And we need to do a better job if we're going to convince people that managing the land differently, say for water storage or nutrient recycling, is a cheaper alternative to do something that we're doing right now. We have to create the demand for the use of that knowledge. You need to have a tracking accountability system. We're slowly but surely developing that at a federal level and at different state levels. You have to define what the service is. If I buy corn, I have a reasonable notion in my head what the corn quality attributes are going to be. The same is necessary for ecosystem services. I need to know quality attributes. So if I'm going to pay for something, I have a reasonable notion of whether someone who's supposed to be providing that service delivers. That's a role for government, and has always been a role for government, and is a necessary activity for us to involve in developing those metrics. Valuation, uncertainty, every watershed is slightly different, and the service going to be provided by watersheds are going to be slightly differently. It's a lot of future employment for graduate students. The new farm bill. That was passed this year. The Water Resources Development Act, as well as the growing interest by insurance industry and reinsurance industries, creates new demand for the use of this knowledge. It opens up new sources of money. The Farm Bill does, in part, speaking very quickly, and because it creates opportunity for leveraging federal dollars with states and local dollars. It's similar to if anyone listens to public radio right now, there's always saying, your $1 can be matched by $2, become $3. It's the same thing if we use federal funds as match for state and locals in order to expand that pot. Another thing I do like about the new Farm Bill is that it has a flood mitigation option, and that flood mitigation is very, very important because people do not like to have their homes flooded and are willing to pay good amounts of money in order to reduce the risk of future flooding. And then there's WRDA, and that's the Water Resources Development Act, new standards for actually how you identify and evaluate projects and futures, principles and standards that actually that take into account today's science and not the science of 1983. Watershed approach that calls for the consideration of the cumulative effects of past actions in the watershed, emphasis on collaboration, non-structural approach, just as important as structural approaches. The actual guidelines to implement now sit with the White House. The standards have actually been released. Hopefully after this election they get released. And in short, even shorter, because I have even less time. I'm optimistic. We can actually work smarter in using the tools that we have right now in order to better allocate our resources to address these problems. How fast it occurs depends upon entrepreneurship, and how quickly people recognize the opportunity to make a difference and make a profit. Thank you.
Andrew.